welcome to the Gate Theatre's podcast series. My name is Selena Cartmell, and I am the Artistic Director of the Gate Theatre. This is the second episode of a new podcast initiative that we will be hosting over the coming months and offering a diverse and, I hope, exciting range of discussions with leading artists, thinkers, and idea makers. Today's podcast focuses on our most recent streamed Gate production of the world premiere of Frank McGinnis's The Visiting Hour, which is currently available to view on demand until the 23rd of May. Over the next 30 minutes, we drop in on an informal conversation with actor Stephen Ray, who plays the father, Judith Roddy, who plays the daughter, and director Katrina McLaughlin, who offer us unique insights into Frank's writing, the process, and the collaboration involved in making a new piece of theatre. Enjoy.
Tell me, as I very strangely, unusually, as I was unusually the last person into this project, can you talk a little bit about how it started or where it started? Stephen.
Okay. Well, I got pestered by this person called Judith Roddy.
Roddy.
Kept phoning me. Why don't you get Frank McGinnis to write a play for us? Aye, that'll be fine. Sure, I say, you know. Then I go back to real life, you know. And then, but she keeps phoning me. Oh, God, she keeps phoning me. So I said, well, better phone Frank. So I phone Frank. And he's delighted to hear from me. And he says, well, actually, I've got something on my mind at the moment that I think could be very interesting for the two of you. And so I said, well, that's wonderful. So let us know when you've it. So he got it written. And actually, I read it and thought, and I think you did too, Judith. I just thought, this is really tremendous, you know.
Yeah.
Like in a very relaxed kind of way. This is, you know what I mean. I didn't think, oh my God, you know. I just thought, this is the real business, you know. And I think you thought the same, did you not?
I did. It was, you sort of feel that white heat when you're reading something that's just been sent. And it's very hard to concentrate. Very, very hard to concentrate and receive something properly, you know, at its true worth. And it's just, it's hot property in your hand and you sort of feel like, well, it's not yours. You know, it's Frank's. And you know, so you just, even to get to read it at that initial stages is just really exciting and nerve-wracking. It's hard to cut straight to the material, which is all you want to do. You just want to get straight to the work and put all those sort of frayed nerve endings to bed just so you can read a thing, you know, and give it full attention. But yeah, it was extremely exciting and connected with it straight away, you know, thankfully.
And can you tell me, because, you know, I'm very drawn to Frank's work myself and I love the familiarity of the character and his voice feels very familiar to me, being from Inishowen. But what is it about Frank that had you calling up Stephen and saying, get Frank?
I think it's because we both have had a relationship with Frank. And of course, it is wonderful to discover new people all the time to work with, but there's a history and a landscape and the voice. And I mean, you can hear Frank in the words, and there's something very comforting. And I don't know, it brings the north down to the south as well when we're doing it as well. It's sort of pulling it into focus. There wasn't really much thought about that at all. It's just instantly Frank. Yeah. How can it not be?
And what's the first project you worked on with Frank, Stephen?
Oh, I think I did. I can't exactly remember, but I did do a television thing that was about a football scout coming from Man United to try and pick up I forget what it was called, but it was Ray McAnally was in it, another Inishowen man, and a bunch of other people. Lloyd Hutchison was in it. It was all about young guys, and I think I was a former player who was cracking up, you know, which sort of felt like me, all right, you know. And then, I did this great play of his, which was called Someone Who'll Watch Over Me. And we started in Hampstead Theatre in London and then went into the West End. And then we went to Broadway with it for 6 months. And it was a truly great experience. And a similar kind of thing to The Visiting Hour, because really it's it's just about a couple of people sitting in a room and fashioning a kind of relationship or discovering it, or, you know. And I think nobody can do this quite as brilliantly as Frank, you know, because it's not, you know, the door doesn't open, it doesn't, no one else comes in. I mean, in The Visiting Hour, we have merely have the occasional interfering sound of the tannoy telling them to hurry up and get on with their meeting. And yet it's so full of, it's the most full relationship you could imagine on a stage, I think, you know. Yes. And I don't know anybody who does it quite like that, you know.
Yeah. And it's a really, like literally facing another actor for an entire play. It's a really arresting act. And, you know, you directly receive the love and the playfulness and the criticism, all of it. You receive it all from the other actor. And we have no business but each other to attend to. Mm. That's the thing. It's the relationship. You know, there's all, you know, all the flourishes and the discoveries that you do when you're sort of marking out a rehearsal room, and, you know, what you do in week two or week three. I mean, depending on how a director works, but the business in this is each other. And
what have you done with him before, Judith?
He did an adaptation of The Wild Duck. And I wasn't long out of college. I played Hedvig, and I just had an absolutely wonderful time on that. And then I've done stuff for Glebe House, Dollywood's Kitchen for him, and there's been things along the way, but that was the main one. That was my main connection with Frank. And I just had such an amazing time on it. I mean, you know. Tragic story. Nothing like a bit of an...
But he is the funniest guy. He's the funniest guy in the world, really. When, yeah. You know, I was in a version that we commissioned for Field of Uncle Vanya, and it was the most colloquial and hilarious thing. In fact, it should be done again. I don't...
Yeah.
But it's just hilarious.
Yeah,
you know? And yet you're heading towards tragedy all the time.
Mm.
You know, wonderful. Very much the spirit of Chekhov, you know.
Mm.
And that's the thing, isn't it, with The Visiting Hour? There's a kind of an intimacy that allows the characters to be very dark and very comic side by side.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I love most about it, is it's the language, you know, is... Oh, you know, it's so great that we have somebody that lets you just sound vaguely like yourself and be funny. And, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that seems to me like a big arrival in terms of Irish theatre. I mean, you know, when you can do plays that can be seen all over the world, and yet nobody's, and they're fully realised, you're not expecting the Irish to just be funny, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, it's great. It's great. I mean, of course, Friel was the same, and there's lots of others the same, but Frank has a particular kind of absolute careless genius, you know. Mm-hmm.
got the script first, was there something in particular that spoke to you personally, would you say?
Well, it spoke very deeply to me personally because I spent a lot of time visiting my mother, who was suffering from dementia and was in a care home. And it influenced a lot how I approached the character, because I'd seen all the, I'd seen her loss, you know, and her confusion and the deep sadness to her of her loss, you know, and yet not quite understanding what was happening to her, you know, not at all understanding, in fact. And, you know, I can, it was terribly moving to have a chance to understand that, you know. And I'm assuming that Frank had a similar experience with a relation, but yeah, I'm not saying that made it, but it made me know her again, you know. It made me feel that, you know, and it was good, and I could remember the last time I saw her and she looked at me, you know, she looked up at me, and I'm haunted by that look, you know. Mm-hmm. And I imagine it's something like what the daughter in this, every time she leaves, she will think, maybe this is the end, maybe this is the last one, you know. It's very, it's shocking, really. Because it seems to me, I don't know that, I mean, as we all talked about when we were doing it, like when I was a young fella, my granny, we didn't say she had dementia. We said she was doting.
Yeah.
And she never went to a care home. People and neighbours would come in and see her, you know, and people would go round to her house and everything. But she wasn't condemned to, I mean, maybe families were closer together in those days, I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
you know, maybe they were more willing to care for the, it's just something that everybody will experience. That's why, you know, that's why I think it's a great play to do.
There was something about it I found, you know, when we worked on it, probably, you know, through how you approached it, Judith, which I kind of hadn't noticed when I read it the first time, which was how much somebody in that situation, when they're visiting a parent or a relative with that illness, how much you have to kind of control the engagement, because if you relax a little bit too much or expect them to be your father or your sister or whoever it is, if you allow that back in, it's too overwhelming, it's too emotional. So in a way, that kind of journey of how you control the engagement was something that I hadn't noticed initially. Was that a conscious thing or from the beginning?
Yeah, because I think the thing is, you know, you watch, you wait, try not to trigger, absorb. You're fishing for memories, even though it's something that's present. You know, it's playing. It's things are nearly becoming reflective in the present state, and you don't want it to be that. You'd want to stay in the present and not worry about what happens in the future for the relationship or what you're dissolving in the past. So it becomes about a level of concentration and watching and waiting and trying to be generous, you know, and contain, because you can't paint your own feelings all over the top of someone else. Yeah. It's unfair.
Yeah. You know, you
just have to wait with a bit of grace, which is, of course, is incredibly difficult. How can you, if you're being tested or, you know, things can turn on a penny. You don't know.
Mm.
So you don't want to trigger or upset. It's Yeah, to tone everything, to pull it all right back is because we always want to do, don't we? You know, yeah. We always have the offerings and the things we can play and put our signature on things, but listening is a thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And the gate really helped with that, didn't it? There was something about the gate and the way that Selena has created that studio environment that really put the focus on the listening between the two of you. Did you find that?
Oh, majorly so. I mean, I thought the gate was like a third character, you know, like a silent partner. Mm. It was without any intrusiveness. And even it was just the level of attention, you know, Andy in with us every day, watching the sound, you know, the small things of not having a visible mic. We know it's theatre. We're not pretending anything else, but there are small things that we can shift to allow for a new hybrid. And, you know, and so I think them working in the gate, it wasn't, the whole and the sum of the parts became a different thing because we were so reliant on each other. We weren't just turning up and prepping our roles and doing that. I was listening to Jim's conversations with the technicians. Like, I liked seeing how the rehearsal room became the base for the crew. You know, I was like, that's a really nice handover. The crew are all in there. Or you see how people are gathering around the monitor, like they're watching a St. Patrick's Day parade or a football match. The anticipation was great. And our tech, you know, what we recognize, it felt like all the different modes that we recognize going into, you know, rehearsal, into tech, into preview, into playing, you know, it was a live capture. And so everyone's roles were overlapping. You know, you could see like James Seaver in costume. He was then on, you know, he was then Mr. Continuity as well as everything. You know, you were out on the monitors, you know, our director's out on the monitor. It's like we, you know, Donna is then our first AD. There's an overlapping. It's like we all had to be generous in what the new hybrid was.
Yeah, I got a lovely email today from a writer called Lindsay Rodden who watched it and was really struck by what you're saying, Stephen, about the reflections in the glass. And then later she was watching Little John Nee. I don't know if you know, he's a fantastic theatre maker, musician from Glasgow / Donegal as well. And his show was quite dark, she was saying. So in her own monitor, while she was watching his show, she could see her own reflection and was really struck by thinking about the visiting hour and how we've all become ghosts behind these glasses that are our devices. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really interesting observation because I would agree with you. To me, the accessibility is the big plus with this kind of work. But there's no comparison with sharing the same breath as your audience and knowing that you're affecting each other. Sure there isn't.
The area man, they were brilliant, weren't they?
Yeah. The company that filmed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal.
One thing that really struck me thinking about it though is because there were so many people involved, it was a really big collaboration in terms of all the gate staff and all the technical staff and us and then the film crew, that, you know, there was an audience there in one way, wasn't there? There were like, they had to participate as an audience to kind of feel it out as they were kind of coming in and out and finding their moment and finding the moment where they could come in and change something or respond to something. Do you think?
Well, they were, for everyone was incredible. I mean, it was an incredible team performance by everyone, you know, and the crew, the film crew were sensational. And everybody was. It's just, and it's been a totally happy experience in the sense that, look how fortunate we were that Frank didn't write a bummer, you know. you know. that he wrote something that, you know, just immediately said, yeah, well, we need to do this, you know.
Yeah.
And then he was very keen that we do it during the period of the pandemic rather than wait, you know. Although I think it will have equal power once the pandemic is gone, and if the pandemic is gone and we're doing it in the Gaiety Theatre live, you know.
Think the play works on a metaphorical level, doesn't it, being kind of separated by that glass, as well as the literal story that Frank's telling about not being able to actually have physical contact with your relation, but the fact that the wider story of the dementia puts that artificial kind of barrier between you and the person you're talking to. So even that in its own right does stand up outside of the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's the same with someone who'll watch over me. You know, many people watching it had experienced being kidnapped in Beirut, you know, which was, that was what it was about. And but they'd experienced all of the presumption about each other that the characters displayed, you know, and resentment, and in the end, a kind of love, you know. So that was... So that's his genius, you know. He makes you feel you're going through it.
Did anyone feel any parallels with King Lear working on it?
Not sure. We were chatting about that on the first days. That was... Yeah. I definitely felt a Cordelia thing going on from the minute I walked into the room. Happy that I am, I cannot heave my heart into my hand.
We talked about it a little bit in rehearsal, didn't we? The parallel with the epic story of King Lear and the daughter, father-daughter relationship. And I just think it's really interesting how these kind of big central themes keep being revisited and how kind of pertinent they are at the moment.
Well, you know, I do feel that, for instance, another play that I did recently, the last play I did before this, Cypress Avenue by David Ireland, I thought that was a Lear story, a man who kills his family, you know, kills his daughter because he can't understand life at all.
Yeah.
And it had the size of that, you know. I suppose that's the great thing about these guys, you know. They're so versed in the great drama of the world, you know.
Yeah.
So many great laughs, so many dark, great laughs at Cypress Avenue. Oh.
Yeah.
Did I enjoy the dark laughing? It was brilliant.
Yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it, I suppose, that we do hold on to, you know, through these things, these big events, is that dark northern sense of humour that I think we all appreciated over the rehearsal period.
Sure did. Yeah.
We had plenty of laughs ourselves, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
Well, it's often the way when, you know, when it's, you know, when it's a sensitive subject and it's hard to visit, and you know you're entering into something that's gonna awaken something in you, so you do need to like completely cotton wool yourself in crack. You do because you have to balance that out.
That was something, Stephen, that we, you know, given it's the first time we've worked together, that was a big surprise for me, how funny, how bold you are. You're jokes. Your jokes and your sense of humor was lovely.
Well, you see, I was used to dread rehearsals, and now I enjoy them because it's the only time I ever get to meet anybody with him. No, well, I'm glad, Katrina. I'm so glad you find me funny. But sure, that's the first instinct in acting is to make people laugh, you know. I believe that, you know. It's like when you're when you're a kid, that's what interests you in acting, is the response you get when people actually laugh. And yeah, so let's all do something again, as well as France.
Yep.
Let's do something very, very fun.
Great. Well, I think probably that feels like a natural place to leave it. Thanks very much for the chats, guys.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Lovely to see you at a distance. Bye-bye.